Welcome to our podcast, Raising the Aviation Bar, a Eurocontrol podcast that explores the stories of the people who are transforming European aviation from the ground to the sky.
Hello. My name is Anita Zech, and in today's episode, I'll be speaking to Patrick Manner, Eurocontrol's Cybersecurity Program Manager in charge of the EATM CERT, European Air Traffic Management Computer Emergency Response Team. Patrick and his team support Eurocontrol member states and the European aviation sector with vital cybersecurity services that aim at building cyber resilience and awareness. His team is sharing air traffic management cyber intelligence, coordinating pan-European responses to cybersecurity alerts, as well as working to pool resources and procurement for cybersecurity services that can benefit the entire aviation community. And a key part of their work is also sharing best practices and networking with other sectors. Thank you for joining us on this podcast, Patrick.
Hello.
Patrick, before we focus on cybersecurity and aviation, let's first talk a bit about you. What's your background and what inspired you to pursue a career in cybersecurity?
So I've been working for 35 years in aviation, and that's something that I always wanted to do. It was decided at the age of 10. You know, I had the chance to be born in Toulouse, the city of aviation. And when I was young, when I was six, when I was hearing Concorde flying over the city, I was running in the streets to see. So aviation is more than a job, it's a passion, and I need to be passionate about what I do. So I've been quite lucky because I worked in working in developing software for air traffic management for aircraft, and then I joined Eurocontrol in the safety department where I was dealing with the safety assessment. And then I joined the CESAR when I worked on transversal aspects, including cybersecurity. But I've been lucky because I've always been able to work on things which were passionating, you know, creating new things and launching stuff. So I had the chance to, when I was back at Eurocontrol, to develop a project related to cybersecurity. And it was important to me because I tried to do that in the framework of CESAR 1 in 2009, and it was not that easy. I faced a quite strong opposition, but I'm a bit stubborn when I smell that something is... It's worth it, I say, well, it's worth insisting. So when back at Eurocontrol, I took over those projects. That's when I was able to set up the CERT in 2017. And that's when I engaged seriously in cybersecurity because I was feeling that it was something attractive and that would be fitting my need for passion.
It's really encouraging to hear that, you know, somebody has had a passion since they were a child and they were able to pursue it. And I think everybody who knows you also knows how much dedication and passion you and your team work. So that's really nice. Thanks for sharing that. In my intro, I tried to mention some of the cybersecurity services you and your team provide, but I guess that just scratches the surface. Can you give us an overview of what your team is working on to support European aviation in cybersecurity?
Yeah, in fact, what is quite interesting is that since 2017, we've been able to develop our portfolio. So we have products which span from cyber threat intelligence products. We have ad hoc in case of an incident, whatever. But we have also periodic products like weekly, quarterly, annual report. So that's something that we have developed quite rapidly because we felt it was important to raise awareness, to open the eyes to the community, to show that this was happening and that aviation was not immune of cybersecurity. We developed also a service to conduct a penetration test, like hackers. It's so-called also ethical hacking. It's a way to find vulnerabilities and to allow the owners of the system to fix those problems before the bad guys find them and, more importantly, exploit them. So we have now a kind of brand in that, in pen test on aviation systems. And we have conducted a lot on our stakeholder system as well as Eurocontrol system to help the community to understand those vulnerabilities because most of them are common. When you find something on an airport or in an NSP, it applies to, or an airline, it applies to all of them. Also, we try to promote the training, from a technical point of view or from a tabletop point of view. So mid-June, we'll have the second aviation capture the flag. So it's an exercise, technical exercise for incident response guys who will be competing, trying to resolve challenges and having fun and importantly knowing each other. We have the same for the Room 42, which is a kind of tabletop exercise simulating a cyber crisis for senior management. And when I say senior management, it's CEO, CTO, COO, DHR, head of com, so that they all face the stress in a room where during 1 hour they are feeling, you know, light effects, sound effects, a guy interacting with them, putting pressure, so that they understand that managing a cyber crisis is different from managing a safety crisis that we are used. So, and tabletop exercises. So we have also the European Aviation Common Public Key Infrastructure, which is a way to help securing the identity of exchanging parties. We are supporting ICAO. So this is just an overview, but we have quite a lot, and we develop them over time with upon the request of our stakeholders saying, can you help us for this or for that?
Yeah, there is indeed quite a list. So what are the most common cyber threats that the aviation industry faces today? And of those, what should aviation actors be most worried about?
In fact, we identify that there are three main categories of cyber threat actors. The most, I would say, active one are the cyber criminals. We estimate that aviation is losing on a yearly basis billions of euros. When I say billions, it's more than a few. It's most probably in the order of tens. I will give some concrete examples to illustrate that point. So clearly, this is an issue because aviation can't really afford to lose so much money. So typically, as examples, we have the fraudulent website impersonating airlines or airports. Only that, this is generating a loss of €1 billion per year. So there are bad guys, you know, generate websites which look like a legitimate website. So they don't, the airlines, the airport do nothing. It's just the bad guy deciding, well, it's worth making some money. So thanks to those guys, we'll generate a website that look like whatever airline, and we'll sell tickets, of course. If you buy them, you don't get them. And sometimes when you Google the name of an airline, you may have quite rapidly, even as a top proposition, kind of fraudulent one. So not easy. Sometimes it's copy-paste of the real one, so quite easy to be trapped. And for that, we have help airlines. We are an airport. We scan periodically public websites, and when we find something that is not legitimate, we ask them because it could be honeypot. And if it's not legitimate, we ask this fraudulent website to be suspended, so that you know, nobody can buy there. Ransomware are an issue. Now we are facing something like 2 ransomware per week, affecting an aviation stakeholder somewhere in the world. And considering the extent of the aviation supply chain, company being affected somewhere, you may realize that this is affecting quite a number of aviation stakeholders. And it works, why? Because basic things like phishing are still working. A lot of staff click on phishing, and this can trigger a ransomware. The second group are the state-sponsored groups. So it's state conducting cyber activities against others. If you think about it, it's nearly 20% of the cyber attacks worldwide, whatever the sector, which are conducted by states. So a state deciding to conduct a cyber attack against the infrastructure of another state. So this is the reality of the world we are in. But those are quite usually sophisticated, so it's quite difficult to prevent them from being successful. So what you just can hope is that you may detect it and mitigate, but if they won't, they will be successful. And the third group is what we call the hacktivist, with an H, is guys who are conducting hacking, if I may say so, with a motivation which can be geopolitical, which can be environmental, societal, or whatever. And those guys are usually willing to convey a message. They want to be vocal, they want to be in the media, they want their message to be, I would say, propagated. And sometimes aviation is used as a platform to amplify their message. It's not aviation as such which is the target. It could be aviation is a good way, to show, to deliver our message and to be successful in our propaganda. So these are the three main groups that we are identifying. A fourth one which is coming is what we call the insiders. So guys from within the company being manipulated or consciously doing something nasty on their company for whatever reason.
I understand that one of the categories for cyber attacks is also the so-called DDoS attack, which stands for distributed denial of service attack. During such an attack, the attacker will send multiple requests to a website, flooding the website essentially, so it's no longer able to handle the amount of requests and stops functioning properly. Eurocontrol's external website was actually recently the victim of such an attack. What would you say are the most effective techniques and strategies for mitigating and preventing DDoS attacks?
Yes, indeed. Since the beginning of the war in Ukraine, we have seen more DDoS attacks. And for this third category that I was mentioning before, hacktivists, so guys willing to convey a message, a DDoS may not always be disruptive from, an operational point of view, but it's a good way to communicate a message and to use that for propaganda, whether, by the way, the effects are true or not. I will give you a concrete example after. So, yes, back on what happened to Eurocontrol, yes, we've been a victim of a DDoS attack by pro-Russian activists because Eurocontrol is supporting Ukraine. So, yes, the attack caused interruptions to our website and the web availability, but there had been no impact on the European aviation network, no flight cancellation, no delays. And is it on that, because you will understand later, at the time of the propaganda. Our core operational systems continue to function normally without impact on European aviation. And why I mentioned that it's important that there were no flight delays, no cancellation, because it started a Wednesday, and you know that on the Thursday, French controllers are going on strike, and there are flights delayed and cancellations. And the group used that as a way to show that their attack was successful. It was not due to the DDoS, but they don't care. You know, for them, whatever evidence of what they've done can be successful, they use it whether it's true or not. So that's a sign how these kind of hackers, these kind of hacktivists are performing. They are just interested in propaganda, not based on unfair argument. They don't care about that. So typically, in fact, the issue with this kind of attack is that when you think about mitigating it, the first thing you need to do is conduct a kind of security risk assessment. Is the risk of DDoS being successful acceptable or not to your organization? And you may decide that yes, because what is on the website, I don't care. If it's done, so what? So you may decide not to invest a single penny in mitigating or preventing it. Now, if you consider that there are some services which need to be protected, so the risk is kind of not acceptable if you don't mitigate it, yes, there are some measures that you need to put in place. And usually it's a mix of, we always say that technology is not the silver bullet. So you need a mix of people, equipment, and processes. So first you need to get prepared. You need your organization to think about that before. What could happen? What could be the impact? What could be the consequences of that? What do I want to avoid? What kind of mitigation means I have to put in place? And also detection, because the DDoS may have a certain rate and your protection can be effective up to a certain rate and not after a certain rate. So you need to have a strategy. What are the important business services that I need to protect with a certain level of priority? Because you may not be able to protect everything. So what we call the crown jewels. So you need to have also some kind of intelligence about how DDoS are connected, because they evolve. They are not all the same. So over time, they change. They add some new technical tricks, features. You need to deploy detection means and protection means to test the resilience of your system periodically. Is my system actually able to react as I thought? You may have some bad surprises at the time of an actual one. Have a response plan, including the communication point of view, external communication and with your staff, because you may have also some communication means that may not work because of the DDoS, so you need to think about that. And some design, some architecture, approach to make sure that you have maybe dissimilarity, redundancy, and of course, train it, test it from time to time, make sure that the procedures, everybody knows, you don't depend upon person. That's really important. It should be anybody at that time being on duty, being able to apply the procedures, know what to do and how to do it and whom to inform, how to inform them and so on.
Okay. I think this is very concrete and really hands-on. Previous Eurocontrol reports on cybersecurity and aviation have shown that all categories of aviation stakeholders can be hit by cyber attacks. Nobody's exempt from that threat. In your opinion, what are the most critical security controls every organization should implement?
Well, you remember what I was saying about the ransomware, that we see a lot of phishing. So what is phishing? And when you receive an email and, well, maybe it's not coming from the intended party, so check the actual email address, not the name that appears, and you may have a link and you may have a temptation to click because you will win a super holiday package or whatever. So these kind of things are important, and we are working hard at Eurocontrol on hardening emails. So we have adopted some practices like DMARC, SPF, stuff like that. But what is interesting is that they can be fully effective if all the parties apply that, if both sending and receiving parties apply that. So it's we are not at the you know, the middle age where you have a castle that you can completely isolate. That's over. We are interconnected. Therefore, we need everybody to play that game and make that effort of raising the bar, of improving its best practices, for example, for the email. The identity management, I think, is really important to make sure that you receive information from the expected party. So that's why we have this European Aviation Common Public Infrastructure Project to help aviation improving this aspect. It's part of what we call the zero trust. You may have heard about that. Zero trust means that you can't trust a party. You need to make sure that it's actually the connection you expect with the party you expect. Vulnerability management, that's important because there are a lot of vulnerabilities which are disclosed, and patching them is not always that easy, especially when you are working in a safety environment. You need to demonstrate that the patch doesn't affect your system, that this patch is safe, especially for the operational environment. Security by design, I think it's really important because I would say in aviation, we have this challenge of having some systems which are quite numerous, and therefore, each time you introduce a new system, you need to think about the security of this system, but also the security of this system in the environment with the other systems around, which themselves may be of a kind of different level of security. And finally, I think what is really important is that we need all to have an information security management system, ISMS. In fact, now we don't have the choice, and because the new regulation has been published, the 2023/203, so-called Part IS. So by February 2026, all the aviation stakeholders shall have an information security management system. And that will help to see what are the areas which deserve improvement and which are kind of more or less at the right level or good. So, you know, there is not a silver bullet. That doesn't exist. You, by just doing one thing, you can say, no, I'm done, I'm okay. Silver bullet, cyber not an issue anymore. You need a panel of activities, equipment, process, technology, education, training, and that's not easy. It takes time. You don't do that in 1 year, clearly not.
I think this reply really shows why the work you and your team do is so important, and there's so much that organizations actually have to watch out for. Now, I have another question that is more related to a key transformative development that is going on at the moment, artificial intelligence and machine learning. But the more digitalized ATM services are, it seems that more threats they are exposed. So what kind of a challenge does this pose to cybersecurity and your work?
Well, it's really interesting because I hear quite often artificial intelligence, that's a threat, we should ban it. I think for me, you know, it's like anything. Yes, it could be a threat. But again, I remind you that a threat can be acceptable if the risk at the end is acceptable. So it's not because we have more threats that we have more risk. It's up to us to make the risk ultimately acceptable. And for me, I see it, yes, maybe as a threat, but also as an opportunity. And as I'm a positive guy, and I think because, I mean, don't dream, we won't stop it. This will happen, so we have no choice. So therefore, see it more as an opportunity, but realizing what kind of threat it can be. So typically, I think it's a good opportunity to save resources. Personally, I use it a lot to improve my productivity, to challenge whether the things I'm preparing is complete, you know, are complete, whether we're addressing all the aspects. So that's a good way. Of course, you just don't tick the outcome as it is. You need to challenge it yourself to say, well, is that correct? Or is that sufficient? Or no, that's not applicable. It's nice, but that won't work in reality. So It's more an assistant. I use it as an assistant. And for example, for the ATM cert, we have developed some applications. We have already two applications. So just to tell you, to illustrate my point, one is, you know, when there is ransomware, quite often the bad guys are releasing files that they've stolen before, because with those files that they can threaten the company to say, pay. Otherwise, you see those documents that we have stolen on your system will publish them to damage your reputation, and therefore, you know, it's a threat to pay the ransom. So quite often they release a gigabyte of files, and you have few minutes to analyze a lot of documents and ask yourself, are they aviation related? So instead of doing this boring job of opening all of them, we have developed an application which will analyze whether a document is aviation related. So you see, it's purely saving time and frankly, boring task. You don't get clever by doing that. Another one is when you do pen tests, we try to brute force access by finding passwords. And what we have found out is that we have some software to generate those passwords. We have kind of tables of existing passwords, but quite often guys in aviation may use aviation-related passwords. You know, with, I don't know, 787 or 380 or whatever inside. Huh? So typically we have developed an application which is creative in a way that is, looking at aviation words and see whether we can generate some passwords which are aviation related. So you see, it's helping to be more creative than what pure software could be. So AI can help definitely. We are also thinking about some approach where somehow it will be what we call a federated learning. So instead of having the data being shared, because some data are sensitive, some data are maybe even corrupted. So we have to be careful in some cases. So it's easier maybe to share the model. The model is trained on data locally. We don't know. We need to trust the company. We trust that you have good data set. And there we go. The model is trained. And this is enriching a central model. So you see, AI can help, especially because there are a lot of data that we are sitting on that we can't exploit. And without AI, we will never make a use of it, which is a pity. That's really a pity. So that's the opportunity. Now, the threat, yes, definitely, the bad guys can do the same. So they can develop some cyber attacks, which can be a bit more sophisticated or relying on more data and therefore generating things which can be even more, I would say, acceptable from a human point of view. You may believe it even more. And clearly, yes, when you use AI, you have to think about it. So like, don't put your life on Facebook. Well, it's the same. Don't put your life on AI. So when you want to ask AI to help you, don't put sensitive data. Use your common sense. If there are certain data that are not, I would say, to be shared, well, don't give that to the AI application, or do that in a fully controlled environment in your local environment where you know that nobody will, have access to your data. So behind that, it's also education, how to use it. For me, one of the big failures of cyber generally speaking, that we introduce technology without the education that goes with it. With AI, it's the same. We just put it on the market and we tend to forget that maybe we need to explain how to use it. But I would say common sense is most often not that common, but it's a good way to try to ask yourself, well, do I really want those data to be shared with others? In that case, don't do it. So an opportunity and a threat, but more importantly, I think an opportunity.
Thank you really very much for sharing this. This was really interesting for me because I think I have now a very good understanding of what you guys are doing and how you're using artificial intelligence. And also thank you for like making it very clear what are the opportunities and what are the threats and just highlighting that to our listeners. How do you see the field of cybersecurity evolving in the aviation industry in the coming years?
Well, I think that, unfortunately, the big challenge is that we need to invest much more in cyber in our sector. But currently, this is a challenge because aviation is recovering from the COVID. So, we are not, I would say, in a period where it's that easy to invest. And there are other major structural challenges like fuel, which are ahead of us. And my experience is that unless you have been hit, well, there is a kind of natural human trend not to be so proactive and say, well, so far we've been doing good, so we're investing more. So that's, I would say, for me, one of the big challenges is understanding that we need to invest. Because, cyber will not generate revenue. Even if you invest, the day after you can be subject to a cyber attack that can be successful. So it's not that easy to convince to spend that much money. But frankly, it's necessary. I think we have given some example where it was paying off. So I would say make up your mind. You know, just to illustrate my point, discussed with the company, they had a ransomware. They were asked to pay 4 million euros as a ransom. They decided not to pay. They analyzed after 1 year how much it cost them to fix all the problems, nearly 4 million. So make up your mind. I think it's really worth to invest. So one of the other challenges I think that aviation will always face is this mix of, you know, old system, legacy system, which were designed with an old way of thinking about security. Currently, some even have nothing. With the new one, with the up-to-date cybersecurity by design. And those systems will be interconnected. So that will be really a difficulty. You know, the aviation system is not complicated, it's complex. We have a lot of subsystems. And understanding all the interconnection is difficult. So that's a challenge. And I was saying this extent of the supply chain. We have so many companies supporting aviation, which can go from catering, de-icing, refueling, to flight plan providers, to telecom, to navigation, to surveillance. It's huge. So difficult to control that. I think also another one is this access to resources, to having access to cyber experts. We have overall in the world a shortage of cyber experts, and attracting them to work in aviation is even more a challenge when you have, you know, banks paying much more. So that's why I think it's important to sell this passion of aviation, because somehow working cyber in aviation, well, that could be, you know, for me it's much more fun than working for a bank. But so we need to deliver this message to attract some new resources in a diversity approach. And finally, to understand that we're all connected. So a company can't protect itself. That's impossible. We're all interconnected. We need to do that all together, collectively. So it's really a challenge that is for all of us, and where each of us, we can help each other.
You mentioned the question of attracting the right talent. And I can imagine that quite a few listeners out there who may say, wow, this sounds like a really interesting field to be working in. What kind of profile, skills, certifications are needed for a successful career in cybersecurity?
Yeah, no, it's in fact, why cyber is so interesting, because there is a societal dimension. You know, I used to work in safety there. Well, in fact, there are some mistakes, some errors. Think about it. Behind each cyber attack, there is an intelligence. So that's what also is making it so attractive, but also so, I would say, requiring quite a significant ticket to enter, and not only to have it, but to maintain it. So yes, cyber can be quite technical. So you need to conduct certain studies to understand what is cyber. There are, when we say cyber, you know, it's not one kind of job, and there are many, I would say, subcategories. You can be a pen tester, ethical hacker. You can work more on cyber threat intelligence, or you can work on what we call public infrastructure. So they're not, I would say, that easy to enter. Maybe there are opportunities for guys who are, I don't know, familiar with taxonomy to enter in cyber threat intelligence, because you are able to manipulate a lot of information, to correlate them, to analyze them. But overall, it's clear that it's not that easy, because it's requiring some technical skills which are, you can't acquire in 6 months or 1 year. It's a minimum 2 or 3 years to get them, I would say. But we are open to that. I mean, why? Because we don't have the choice. We are short of resources. So clearly, we will have to look for guys who are interested in a kind of a new career, and taking the time to study it, and being willing to join cyber in aviation, clearly. So open to it, but the ticket is not for free.
Good. So we're coming slowly to the end of our podcast. So I want to ask you, what would you like people who are working in aviation to remember when it comes to cybersecurity, and what they can do to increase the cyber resilience of their domain?
I think for me, the main message is that we all have a role to play, whatever our duty, whether we are in the admin part, in the procurement, in the legal, or in the technical side, on the operational side, on the management side, on the project, the delivery side. Everybody has a role to play. Why? Because In fact, we have two aspects in our job. The first one is that as an individual, we have an account. So clearly we have access to a system and therefore we are the guardian of that. So we have a duty to protect it. Your credentials, your login, your password, your token, all that, you have to make sure that you protect your, I would say, entry point. That's your responsibility. And that, I would say, whoever in the company is concerned by that. So that's really important. Also, the kind of information you share, the kind of publication you make on social media or whatever, the kind of information you are, I would say, showing when you are in a train, in an aircraft or whatever. So all that is responsibility of everybody. You don't have to be paranoid, but there are, I would say, basic common sense rules that you have to apply that will make the life of everybody easier. And again, as a professional, for example, if you're in a procurement office, well, make sure that all the procurement contracts have security requirements. That's your duty to make sure that maybe the product team forget it. Well, think about that. In the admin, that's the same. When you have, establishing a relationship with the suppliers, with other entities outside your organization, that's the same. You need to think about that. On the project, on the operational side, on the technical side, everybody in its duty has to include cyber, because the bad guys are open to any opportunity to enter system, are interested by whatever information to maybe manipulate you without you being aware of that. So that's your duty to, I would say, add this cyber dimension. Well, as at home now, you don't receive any more mails, cards, letters, you receive email. Well, that's the world we're in. We're moving to digitalization, and that's good. And that's good, but we need to think about it, how to behave and how to use that in a way that will protect your organization and yourself. So that's the challenge. We are all now living in this new world, and we have to adapt to this new world.
Patrick, thank you so much for your advice and for sharing your insight. And thank you to our listeners for joining. If you like this podcast, make sure you subscribe.
Raising the aviation bar from the ground to the sky.